Hello, listeners, and welcome to the fourth and final part of this mini-series on The Work, a group led by Brother Julius. This is Lisa's story, and in part one, Lisa talked us through how her mother became involved in The Work when Lisa was only young. In part two, Lisa explored her life growing up in The Work. In part three, we learned about the various crimes, scandals, and abuses linked to The Work. In this fourth and final part, Lisa talks to us about her escape and recovery from time spent inside this abusive group. For full length, ad-free and early access to these interviews for only £1 a month or $1.50, you can sign up and support the show at patreon.com/thecultvault. Now, here is Lisa.
Your grace and strength is just incredible. I'm so thankful that we're having this conversation right now, and I appreciate the subject matter that we've gone through and talking about things like alcohol addiction, for example, and how that's been one of the most difficult things that you've had to overcome personally cannot be an easy thing to discuss. So I appreciate you allowing us some insight into that part of your life as well. What an incredible journey. Oh my goodness me, Lisa.
I only mentioned it not to derail what we're talking about, but because my whole life is about like advocacy for education and getting over stigma and shame and ignorance and being proud of whatever it is you're trying to accomplish, you know. And, you know, if you want to even talk about traditional Jesus or whatever, you know, he was all about helping the sick and suffering. And that's what I do. That's why I'm in the job that I'm in. I believe in helping people. And I'm very proud of overcoming alcohol addiction, because it was very, very, very hard for me. And it almost took me out a couple times. And again, I wasn't about to give my personal power away to something that was bedeviling me. You know, I mean, there's plenty of alcoholics in the world that weren't raised in a cult, but usually addiction comes from a place of pain or something you're trying to escape.
So before we move on to the last section of just asking you to let the listeners know where they can find all of the media appearances that you've done to shine a light on this subject, your daughter was named by Julius when she was born. I'm wondering if you gave her a new name once you left.
Because the name wasn't too outrageous, and it's actually kind of a pretty name, I let that be up to her when she became an adult. And what happened over the years was that it just got shortened. Her name is a shortened version of the name he gave her. And then she completely legally dropped the middle name, which was strange. And so she has a name now that is a different name than what he gave her, because it's a shortened version. And I remember, you know, this might sound silly, but when my son was born, I remember just being so overjoyed to name him. I remember this feeling of like, this is how it's supposed to be. You know, you don't give your children up. You just don't. This is why I have such a problem with the way I was raised, is that I feel like I was thrown to the wolves. You know, she may have thought she was doing the best she could. She may have her own mental illness issues. I think that if you get this level of deluded, you are an unhappy person that is seeking answers. But for anything to come above caring for those entrusted to you blows my mind. Like, it's supposed to be an unassailable bond. And so yeah, having her was my catalyst. I have no way of knowing if I didn't have her, if I would have left or not. I don't know. But, you know, he died anyway in 1996, Brother Julius. The group kind of disbanded, but yet it still exists in the mindset of the people that still kind of believe in him.
Were there any notable events or controversies or anything in the media about this group before he died in 96?
The child abuse, financial abuse, tax evasion, fraud, you know, hiding millions of dollars from the government, underpaying workers, because people who did get disgruntled and left then tried to sue the companies for money. I remember that was a big deal. And, you know, just the sexual abuse controversy. And of course, the biggest one, the murder of Paul Sweetman. And I think that was 2009. I hadn't been in touch with anybody for a very long time. But when I found out that happened, I was shocked, but not surprised that something that extreme would have happened as a result of this extreme brainwashing. When you feel that someone is telling you to take someone out, you know, because these people that did it were still sort of involved.
Well, why would they turn on Sweetman if he was the sort of financial genius behind the entire operation?
Well, he was already gone. He went on the lam, like he disappeared.
Right.
And I think he disappeared with a lot of money. I'm not really sure, like, I mean, I guess it's not really a legal issue because everything's out in the public anyway. I'm not really sure how much I can speak to details of it. I just know that that was when I was in the documentary I was in was based on someone finding a severed leg, coincidentally enough, on the very country club grounds that I used to work at. A coyote had dug up the remains of Paul Sweetman. And that's the only reason the case was solved, because it was an unsolved case completely.
What, like a disappearance?
He just disappeared and he was murdered. And I think, like, I don't know, poured into concrete or something under somebody's shed. It was something like that. But an animal dug up a leg and they actually matched the DNA and they figured out it was Paul Sweetman. And then the lawsuits and then the criminal investigation began, you know, the details of which can be found in what I'll wind up telling you about. I mean, it's funny how I'm just immersed in talking to you about my experience, but the real one that sort of rocked the world was this murder case.
I feel like I need to do an entire deep dive episode on just the case of Paul Sweetman now.
And just the gruesome manner. I mean, it's like something out of a movie. You know, they bludgeoned this man and put him in a freezer while he was still alive. And then they dismembered
him. Oh my goodness.
They dismembered, like, this man that did it, I used to babysit. I used to work with his mother in a daycare. Like I know this person. His father lived with my brother and my then husband. Like, everything was very inextricably entwined in that group. You know how they say, like, 6 degrees of separation? Everybody was involved in some way with something.
What was he like as a child?
Well, I wanted to say normal, but within the cult, I mean, what does normal even mean? He was a regular kid, him and his sister. I mean, I guess I can speak on this because he's already been convicted. He's in jail. And then the other man that committed this murder is Julius's son, but he died recently. So he can't be prosecuted anymore. He died in prison of cancer.
And what was he like?
I never met him. He was in jail for a very long time. I'm not even sure what he was in jail for. I know that my brother was told to name one of his twins after this man. I just remember his dad loving music and his dad working for the hot dog company that I worked at, and him, this man, fixing my car. And then, you know, I knew his little kids. I knew his wife because she ran a daycare. And then I'm over here living my life. And one day I find out, wait a minute, there was a murder of a significant person in this cult. And who did it? This little curly-headed blonde boy that was quiet. And it was because, you know, at the behest of, quote, the Holy Spirit. Joanne told, and she's dead now too. She had cancer. So,
right. So after Julius died in 96, she took over as the sort of matriarch of the group.
Yeah, I was already out for quite a long time by then. I was on my second marriage and, you know, happily raising my kids and helping raise his kids. I'm not really sure the dynamics that were going on at that time, but she was definitely in charge. I mean, we didn't touch very much upon her, but she was pivotal in this story, and she carried as much weight of authority and fear almost as much as Julius did. You know, you kept her at arm's length if you could, because she was quiet but just as intimidating in a lot of ways. So, but to have this denouement, you know, this way of ending is pretty cinematic, but not surprising. And that's why I talk about cults, because it's not just an unpleasant little weird thing that you get involved in. It's cataclysmic. It's, you know, Julius always talked about the end of the world. He ended our worlds. You know, he ended regular life for us. And then he leaves with no fanfare. He's a regular man that dies. What I heard was that he died with one of his concubines. This might be a rumor, but like he died in the sack of a heart attack. That's what I heard. And, you know, talk about a poetic ending. I mean, but my mother always mourned him. My mother always grieved him and probably still does. And I remember carrying a lot of anger and probably in moments of drunken anger, I remember saying to her, you know, you didn't even mourn my father, but you're mourning Julius. And I, as the dutiful daughter, even that many years apart from this, I actually went to like a, well, they didn't allow funerals in the cult, but like there was like a service sort of. And I actually went just to support her, which is crazy when I think about it. And I even went to my stepfather's funeral to support her. And I was surrounded by cult people. And it was so weird to be not sucked back into it, because that would never happen. But I remember the resentment and the weird feeling I got from all these people that knew me as a kid and a young person. And now I'm this adult and I'm no longer brainwashed. And they still are. I mean, they still had the long beards, and you can just tell by sight who was drinking the proverbial Kool-Aid, you know. And another thing I wanted to mention is that just because a cult is small, and ours was pretty small, I think in its heyday it was maybe 350 followers, which is nothing compared to, you know, Scientology or the Moonies or Koresh or Nexium or all the other ones. It's just as damaging. It's just as toxic. It's on a smaller level, but as huge to each person involved.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, when I tell people I was involved in a cult, they always go, oh my God, which one?
I think it's incredibly important what you're highlighting here in terms of the impact that's felt on each person within the group, no matter the size, because we know that there are leading cult experts like Jan Jelalic, for example, who focus a lot of their work on actually one-on-one cults and family cults and smaller environments where these coercive methods are still in place. It doesn't have to be hundreds, thousands of people. It can actually just be one abuser and one victim.
And it doesn't even have to be religious. Anything that involves mind control and that sort of groupthink, anything that wrests your autonomy away from you is cultic, at least. Reading a lot of books also helped me. Churches That Abuse. I read Steve Hassan's books. Books have always been sort of my salvation anyway, but I loved learning that, oh, wow, there's other cults, and oh, wow, this one actually sounds like this one. And anytime anybody would try to expose truth about what I went through, I felt like, hooray, you know, like I'm heard, you know. I kept these secrets for a very long time. I went through life just thinking this was this shameful secret. What a weird childhood I had. And oh, don't tell anybody, you're not educated. I spill everything now. Everyone who knows me calls me an oversharer. Like, everybody knows everything about my life, because I just, why not? I don't have anything to hide anymore.
No, and these are important things to share. It's incredibly necessary, especially in this period of time right now, where there is so much disenchantment in society across the world, in the technological age especially, that we're having these conversations, because there are experts talking about how they can see a pattern in human behavior from history that is starting to come full circle in terms of groups popping up and people starting to use that same sort of language that we recognize from a lot of these groups that came out of the human potential movement in the 70s. And I was going to ask, actually, you would have been perhaps too young to remember or even hear about the 1978 Jonestown massacre, but you left in 92. So I wonder if you had any kind of reference to leaving the group and then everything unfolding during the siege on Waco in 93, where you're thinking, oh my goodness, that could have been us.
Absolutely. And I'm really happy you brought that up, because literally while that compound was burning, I was at work with my daughter. I was doing my caregiving job. And I remember so vividly being in this den, and she was in the other room coloring or something. She was very young. And that is when that happened. And I remember standing up, looking at the TV and just thinking, that could have been us. That could have been me. There could have been a fire set. I mean, there, all of the extremism, which I used to think we were sort of like a cult light in a certain sense, only because until this murder happened, it didn't seem, I mean, it was extreme. The man called himself, you know, the Messiah. But I mean, as far as things like the Jonestown massacre and David Koresh and all that, I definitely remember being fascinated and very saddened by that story. I remember in later years being fascinated, riveted by Jonestown, and watching all the documentaries, reading a thick book like this on Jim Jones, and just being fascinated with the mindset of these evil men that do these terrible things, and just educating myself.
If Julius would have said, okay, now that the children are married, in air quotes, now we're going to start introducing them to sex, or okay, now that we know the end times are coming, we're going to start arming ourselves against people that might come and try and take our resources. You know, he could have, if he would have, you know, you said he was always pushing the envelope. Who knows where he would have gone if he really wanted to push it that way?
Toward the middle and end, he did induce a lot of paranoia. I remember at meetings, he suddenly had these alert groups, alert teams. He had like sentries with walkie-talkies. You know, he always was making us think that we would be sieged, come under siege. And I'll never forget feeling chills down my spine. And again, these were little things that pinged off in my mind, I think, that made me able to leave, that put some kind of subconscious idea in my mind that, like, I never used the word cult, but that something was wrong. Was he had this meeting one time, again, pushing the envelope to see where we were at in our level of obedience, where he read a story from the news about this child who was beyond being a troublemaker. I mean, from what we know now about child psychology, obviously, if a child is acting out sociopathically, there's something going on. You don't say evil, you know, like, and she was sort of like a person, if you're familiar with the movie, The Bad Seed, her name was Robin, and she was very young, but she was very out of control with, like, I don't know, setting fires and I don't know exactly, but Julius read this news story and he says, I want to know if you people, if my people ever think there's an appropriate cause to kill a child. I mean, he said this publicly. You know, he would drop these little nuggets of like, would this be okay? Well, what about this? And what about, he was testing the waters, because everything did, when I look back on it, like chronologically, it did get more and more extreme.
Well, I mean, the wife swapping and the kind of polyamory in itself is one of those things I feel like male leaders at one point, they're like, okay, well, now I'm going to do this. And then when the men don't leave and their wives are either divorcing them or sleeping with the leader or both, the leader's like, oh, okay, well, I've done this extreme thing, so now I'm going to ask for your children as well, or, you know, whatever disgusting thing comes next.
There was child sexual abuse going on. I know that for a fact. And I know that a lot of men did leave because of giving away their wives. And that's how strong mind control is, because some of these marriages were very intact. They were very good marriages. They were loving. I mean, I knew these people, and these men were like, my wife's going to stay behind to be with, you know. Again, you have to remember, we called him God. He didn't seem like a madman. That's what's so crazy. It was just normal life to obey. There were crazy things. It got crazier and crazier.
So for anybody that would like to know more about the work, about Brother Julius, about the group overall, there are a few different media appearances that you have been a part of before this podcast. One of them, I believe, was the People's Magazine, they have different series on. The People's Magazine investigates blank. They did a couple of seasons, I think, on the People's Magazine investigates cults.
Yes. And also, if anybody wants a little bit more of a deep dive into Julius, now this goes back to the early 90s. There's a pretty intensive series on YouTube called Who is Brother Julius? And I'm not even sure who's in charge of that or not, but obviously it's up for public consumption if it's on YouTube. But if anybody wants to hear more of the backstory about how Julius came to be so deranged, it's actually called Who is Brother Julius? And it's a two-part, pretty intensive deep dive. And I know there's another one on YouTube also, but I don't recall the name. But the People Magazine documentary is called People Magazine Investigates Cults, Season 2, Episode 4, The Sinful Messiah. And that is specifically about the work. And I was in a podcast called Leaving the Lies, Speaking Your Truth, which is on YouTube, and Butterflies and Bravery podcast, which I believe is on Facebook. And I was asked just yesterday to be in another podcast. I think it's called Indoctrinated No More. They found me on Instagram because I'm a big mouth. Like I just weigh in all the time.
I think you're a fantastic guest. I'm not surprised that people are reaching out wanting you to come and share your story with them. It's incredible how forthcoming you are with it as well. You know, we've talked about how difficult it is for people to open up about such personal exploitations. And, you know, you've talked about CPTSD and alcoholism and recovery. And yet we're here having this conversation today. I think you're an incredible individual, incredibly brave.
Well, thank you so much. And I think I already told you I'm writing a memoir, which is going to be called The Work, The World, and Me in Between. I won't say when that's going to come out. I'm going to try to finish it next year. I have a book called Soul Dust, A Collection of Reflections, which will be out this year. I'd love for people to read my poetry. And there's a poem I'd actually like to read, if you'd let me, because it involves the cult. I don't write a lot about the cult, but there's a few. And I do consider myself a poet. It's my main passion in life. So I would love to share a poem.
Well, I think that would be such an incredibly poignant thing to end on. So before you read your poem, I just wanted to say that those things that you've mentioned, the YouTube deep dive, Who is Brother Julius? I'll add those two links to the two-part series into the episode description. Please get in touch and let us know when you have an update on anything that you're publishing, any release date, anything that we can do to help promote your work across the show. You'll have to get in touch and keep us updated with that. And I can't thank you enough for giving me such a wonderful education today and another incredible interview that has moved me to the point of crying. So thank you so much, Lisa.
So pleased that you involved me in your podcast, because I've been very impressed with your work. And you know, I'm not even sure how I came to know about Cult Vault, except that in my algorithms things about cults often come up. I'm always just so happy and humbled and proud to be involved and to use my voice and some kind of a platform. I'm not afraid anymore. You know, I don't live my life that way anymore.
That's incredible. Okay, I'm ready. I'm ready. Hit us with your poetry.
As a youth trapped, I hung out, hid out in the library, a sacred space, a holdfast, a sanctuary. I retreated often to a treehouse too, There the leaves of imagination grew where no hands could reach me. I still can smell the leather and wood of the rooms where I was happy to study Bloom, Alcott, Harriet, Tolkien, to read anything, where quiet and contentment was assured, and all I heard were pages turning or the soft scratching of writing implement to hungry paper. There, in the secure fortresses, I wrote the story of my life. Words were then and still are my armor, a sword traded for the mightier quill, a childhood where I was held hostage by false gods and evil men. I decided that my exodus flowed through ink, my future unfolded in the power of the pen, and through my own words, not his, not theirs, I'd make it to heaven. I escaped to a vast celestial library, but not for a moment loftier than my five senses allowed. For me, you see, the specter of eternity is just to rest my mind, wearied by mere mortality, too brief to read all the words, all the books, all the poems. And I want to write my own as well, in myriad tongues of expression. The margins are where I get to define a subtle divide between the divine and my adolescent hell, a mind quieted to summon the muse, a holy ghost writer named Creativity, shaped like calligraphy, in gentle loops of letters and the number 8 sideways, infinity. It's called A Book Unfolding.
That was so wonderful. Thank you so much, Lisa. And thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate you hugely. And I hope that you enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you so much, Casey. It was such a pleasure to meet you.
Take care. We'll speak soon. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.
That is the end of this mini-series. Thank you, Lisa, for your bravery and strength in sharing your story. For full-length interviews, ad-free with early access, you can support the show at patreon.com/thecultvault. If you'd like to get in touch, you can find me at cultvaultpodcast@gmail.com or follow me on Twitter and Instagram @cultvaultpod. I'm your speaker, Casey, host of the Cult Vault podcast.